más suelen hacer el humo a la corriente.
My name is Graham, and my surname is McIntosh, and I am a member of this committee.
Yeah, thank you, honourable members. Other members, not here, we have a committee discussion. I'm sure they will join us as we continue with our meeting. And welcome IEC, welcome Chair and the CEO, and all the other commissioners who are here present. May I afford you the opportunity to
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Lucas Tabula. I am the Chairperson of the Electoral Commission. On my right, within the night, is Mr. Terry Zulani, the Deputy Chair of the Commission. And next to him is Mr. Matt Tawya, a member of the Commission. And then Mr. Nsutu Moyetra, the CEO. And next to Nsutu Moyetra is Simon Mamabolo, Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, Electoral Matters, and on my left is Stephen Landry, who is the Manager of the Office of the City.
Thank you. We have Met Mpokas Boni, who is also joining us. She is a member of the Portfolio Committee. We would like to give the
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. What I am going to do is just the salient point of our presentation, and thereafter our CEO will then give a fuller presentation. And I'm just going to highlight the issues that are before us as a commission that are preoccupying us. The first one being the Electoral Amendment Bill. As you know, the bill is in Parliament, and we are hoping that its adoption will be fast-tracked and completed soon, because we have to begin with training of our staff members on it, and also everybody will be working with this bill. The political environment, of course, within which these elections are going to be taking place. The coming elections, as we all know, are very significant in the sense that they will mark the 20th anniversary of our democratic rule. But we are looking closely at whatever is happening around us. Civic and voter education, because it seems to tell us areas that might be so we have to study. Census 2011 tells us that this population is made up of young people, and most of them will be voting for the first time in 2014, the so-called country. So we have to have strategies in place to encourage young people to vote, and also to vote, and we have to ensure that we communicate to them in the language that they understand. And in this regard also, we have some strategies that we have put in place, which the CEO will highlight. Civic education I have spoken about, and maybe simply to elaborate on what I meant when we spoke about the political situation, that we want to target places where there are protests of one kind or the other, where there are also unhappiness about the demarcation process as well, because as you know, the demarcation board is also dealing with this process, and have pointed strategies to deal with those places in terms of education, civic education. Some places also in KZN where, you know, there are sporadic incidents of conflict. We're also looking at those and mounting a civic education strategy for those places. We feel that it is important for us also to collaborate with other Chapter 9 institutions, in particular the South African Human Rights Commission, to see the role that there will be playing as we prepare for elections, and we're meeting with them next week to chart a way forward in terms of their role in this election. Similarly, with the Gender Commission, we're also meeting with them to look at issues of women participation and how we can collaborate on those issues. So we will also, I guess, be meeting with the Commission for the promotion of religious, cultural and linguistic communities to look at how we reach out at marginalized communities like indigenous people, the language that we have to, you know, how we communicate with them in terms of their languages and so on. So there are plans afoot to collaborate with other Chapter 9 institutions. Staff training, which the CEO will also talk about in detail, it's another matter that we have to always be alive to ensure that our staff, our electoral staff, is properly trained, they understand the legislative framework, they are able to apply that legislative framework. Training can never be enough, because the people who work in our voting stations, as presiding officers and deputy presiding officers in particular, have a huge responsibility. They have to have the ability to apply the law correctly. So we're looking at that as one of the areas that we need to pay attention to. We've also had a workshop to look at what is it that we need to do to ensure that we run the coming elections in conditions that are conducive to fair election. And we have looked at a number of strategies, what we should be doing with the media to look at conflict resolution mechanisms, to look at how we can have early warning mechanisms for conflict, how we're going to be deploying conflict management teams. And our strategy is really to look at more prevention of conflict rather than dealing with it after it has happened. And we have put strategies. We're going to be looking at working with various groups that will and stakeholders that will ensure that together we can deliver a fair election. The enforcement of the code of conduct remains one of, I think, our challenges in this country. And in this regard, we have to intensify the training of our law enforcement agencies so that they can understand their role in the enforcement of the code of conduct. We are hoping that we are going to convene also a meeting with the prosecutorial services, because the code of conduct can only be effectively enforced if there is effective and successful prosecution. So we're going to be looking at that with the prosecutorial authorities. We are exploring the possibility of maybe the Minister of Justice setting up specialized courts. We haven't spoken to him yet, I have to put this on the record. But you would remember that during the World Cup, the way specialized courts that dealt with expedited crimes that were committed during that period. And we think that if we can have specially designated courts to deal with the code of conduct, we might be successful. So that is one area that we're looking at. Intra-party disputes is something also that preoccupies us. And we're hoping that as we're going to be preparing for this election, as the list of candidates are going to be submitted, our parties will have sorted out their internal challenges. Because if there are internal challenges that are unresolved at that time, they play themselves out during the candidate nomination process. So at the moment, we find a lot of intra-party disputes. Fortunately, these disputes are settled through the court of law, which is a good thing, that whoever is dissatisfied with whatever decision was taken by his or her party resort to the court of law to deal with those disputes. I think one issue that is not there that we have to mention is the credibility of our voters' role. It's an issue that we did not discuss we it is in the public domain that we have had some challenges with the credibility of the voters. This is not widespread. We have to be careful because we are talking just about three areas in KZN. One in particular being Abagumusi municipality, where we're supposed to have a by-election in April. The by-election was postponed by the electoral court. The electoral court issued an order that I'm sure you are all aware of, that the by-election should be postponed pending us conducting an investigation into electoral fraud. And the electoral fraud here was the passing of voters from outside the ward where the by-election was going to be held into the ward where the by-election was going to be held. And there were allegations of passing. And we conducted what we regarded as a thorough investigation to get to the bottom of these cases of passing. And as a result of the investigation that we conducted, we removed about 1,500 voters who our investigation told us that they were not ordinarily residents in the ward where the by-election was going to be held. What we did after the investigation, we took them back to the segment of the voters roll where they were originally registered. And the by-election was supposed to then proceed after that investigation on the 7th of August, last week Wednesday. And the complainant in this particular case then took the case to the Constitutional Court to say that he was not satisfied with the manner in which we conducted the investigation. And the Constitutional Court then, as you might have read in the newspaper, issued an order to interdict us from continuing with the interdicted us from holding the by-election pending us submitting documents to them on the 20th of August to convince the electoral court that the investigation that we conducted was proper. And also the order says that the two parties that were allegedly involved in the passing of voters must show cause to the electoral court why sanctions should not be applied to them. So on the 20th of 8th of August, being the return date for the interdict, we as the IC, we have to submit papers to the electoral court to that effect. So the Abagumusi by-election remains postponed again. We have had similar challenges in two other wards in KZN, but not the same thing as Abagumusi. So I'm just raising this point because one is in the public domain, and secondly, because we need to ensure that we maintain the credibility of the voters as we go into an election. And as we did when we spoke to the Premier and the Provincial Legislature in KZN, that we are appealing to all the political parties to assist us to ensure that our voters are being credible, to ensure that people register where they are ordinarily residents and they vote where they are registered. So that's really my opening remarks. I've taken a little bit of time, but the CEO, Chairperson and Honourable Members, with your kind permission, will then give you a fuller presentation to, you know, expand on some of the issues that I've had. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, distinguished guests, good morning. It's such a joy and a privilege to share the work that we do, the kind of work we really enjoy doing and serving this nation through. We start off with the legislative framework. There's very little there that has changed. In fact, the Constitution remains one of the areas of the law that we look at, the Electoral Commission Act, which has not had any changes. The Electoral Act, hopefully with the matters that are provided for in the bill, will be something that we will be dealing with. But above all, the current term of the National Assembly and provincial legislatures expires on the 21st of April next year. And we are required to have elections held within 90 days of that date. Often at that point, people ask us, what if, you know, at that earliest date you should hold an election? Yes, the Commission will always be ready to hold an election at the earliest date. The election, of course, is proclaimed by the President, and very often we don't talk about this. We take it to be a matter that is a foregone conclusion, but we do get asked the question about us not telling people when the election date would be. In terms of the proposed legislative amendment, we just present today that you know, the Commission has made a number of proposals on legislative amendments, having gone through a process or a number of processes. The first one was looking at the two Constitutional Court judgments, you know, connected to the registration of voters and the voting by South Africans abroad. Those areas we have looked at. The second one, it's a report that we the report that we got previously from observers. We looked at those and considered if there are things that we need to provide for, and we have done so. The third area is election debriefing sessions at all levels of the institution, from the voting station level at municipal offices, through provincial offices, and at national level. Our staff looking at our own faults, looking at our own successes, and then saying what are the kind of things that we need to do. We also conducted election debriefing sessions with civil society organizations. They work with us, they take interest in the work that we do, and therefore we listen to them as well. And finally, we looked at debriefing sessions with political parties. They remain a key stakeholder in the work that we do, and we meet with them very regularly, and when we talk to them, really, a lot of input does come through from that area of the work we do. In terms of the Electoral Amendment Bill 2013, we indicate that the bill, in essence, seeks to amend and insert certain definitions in the Act. It seeks to revise some provisions related to the registration of voters. It also seeks to revise provisions related to special votes in elections of the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. It looks at provisions related to the number of political party agents at voting stations. You will recall that prior to the 2011 local government elections, we had a number of stations which have a high enrollment of voters, voting districts that have a high enrollment of voters. We broke them into a number of streams, and we provided for, in the local government local government municipal electoral act, we provided for more party agents to accommodate that. We are doing the same in this instance. We are correcting certain important technical aspects in the text of the act, and making provisions for matters coming up. The election program itself, it's an important piece of work that we do. I always want to think about this as a major project of a logistical nature that seeks to or begs for thorough planning. In terms of our current plans, the election program management consists of 375 election-related projects. They are well-defined, they are consolidated into, you know, using normal project management tools. We have a project management tool that we have developed in-house in the IEC that then brings all of the work we need to do in terms of preparing for an election. This work started over a year ago, quite a number of these projects have been attained and concluded. The projects are managed across all spheres of the Electoral Commission, namely at the national, at the provincial, and at the municipal levels of the work that we do. Inputs are received throughout all of that organization, and we are able to manage as the executive at a high level and share with members of the commission who, through committees, get to know what we do and get to see if there are any concerns. The electoral project management is updated on an ongoing basis, and progress is reviewed, as I've indicated, formally on a monthly basis. In fact, from the 1st of September, we will be looking at that progress on a weekly basis. This schedule is proceeding according to plan, and we are very pleased to say that there are no concerns that we have to share with you today. In terms of delimitations, voting station network has been updated with human settlement patterns. In this country, human settlement patterns develop on an ongoing basis, and we will continue to follow those developments regularly up to the time when registration closes. Measures have been taken by this commission to ensure that we increase the accessibility of voting stations by voters. You know, in many parts of the country, quite a number of voting stations have been created, some of them with fairly, you know, lower than average number that we have of registered voters because we are cutting distances. Secondly, we are also trying to reduce the number of mobile stations in that respect. The number of voting districts has increased from 2011, when we had 20,859, to what we have currently as 22,225. This number is going to be finalized. I did indicate that we will be following settlement patterns up to the time when we close the voters roll. So in terms of that arrangement, that number stands to be corrected. There are also a number of places in the country where there has been depopulation, and others where there has been an increase in the number of people that have moved in. The current redetermination of outer municipal boundaries may also impact on voting districts, and so we follow that very closely. We are working with the Municipal Demarcation Board, or we are following what they do as they publish their notices, how that will impact voters going forward. We are working with them also on technical alignment, and that work is continuing on an ongoing basis. When we look at strengthening the organization, at time of an election is when, you know, our capacity requires that we consider the added functions and the amount of work and activity that takes place. And in that respect, we have already considered those implications, and I'm pleased to indicate that at national and provincial levels, where we needed to bring in election expansion staff, we've already concluded that process, and these members of staff are starting in most instances at the beginning of September. The other area we have looked at is outreach capacity, which is an area we've always said, you know, it's like writing an examination. You want to, you know, to revise until the last minute. And in outreach, we've had to look at our capacity, and I'm pleased to indicate that we have increased our capacity in all of our regional offices and district councils through the employment of 51 outreach and training officers, who will in fact coordinate the work of outreach and training in those areas. This, of course, is in addition to the regional supervisors that we added just before the 2011 elections, and their support staff that we have added now in the district councils. Orientation sessions for all of the people that we bring on board are very important, and so we have completed their orientation, so that they are indeed very effective in the work when they begin. the recruitment of municipal electoral outreach coordinators has also started. There are 232 of them that we already have on board. The democracy education field workers, there's 1,110 that we are looking at. Quite a number of those we are in the process of appointing. They are ideally going to be in office at the end of September, at the beginning of October. We still talk about election expansion staff. There are a number of offices in the country where municipal electoral offices in the country where we have one person in that office. And when an election is upon us, that one person we have to increase capacity for, because there are a number of projects that the one person would need to do. And in that instance, 131 persons have been identified for 110 municipal electoral offices. A number of this, and you know, I must stress, phase one deals with those officers that on the one hand do training and on the other do operational work. And because the two things are happening at the same time, we are increasing their capacity and we have given them the 131 people. That is in phase one and we are already underway. We have seconded these people and they are training as we speak. In terms of area managers, these are persons that look at work on a ward basis. We have recruited 49% of those, as you will see there. In earnest, that is work that will be completed by the end of this month so that they are in place at the beginning of September. When we look at registration officials, we've already employed 21,901 because we have to train them, and we are very pleased. This is one area where we are also ahead of our own schedule, because we want to ensure that they are trained exceptionally well and that we have enough opportunity to retrain them if we should feel that there is a need to do so. So we are at 50% at this stage, and it's a very welcome progress that we're reporting. Phase two of the recruitment of training and expansion staff will be completed in September. This is in addition to the 131 that I had indicated earlier on. And we should be at full steam by October for registration. Training boot camps for registration weekends have been completed in all provinces. That's also very good. An opportunity for us to retrain if we need to. A total of 19,856 electoral staff members, mainly presiding officers and deputy presiding officers, have been trained to date. I had indicated the numbers that we had employed, but these numbers were as at the 5th of August last week. And so as time moves on, this number will increase, and possibly today we should be sitting at close to 24,000, 25,000. Municipal electoral offices require that, you know, we have an MEO, and particularly at the time of an election, the municipal electoral officer is somebody that we need fairly regularly. And we have looked at ensuring that capacity is in place by the 1st of October. When we look at outreach, this really entails the work that we do in civic and democracy education, the work we do for stakeholder management, the work we do with respect to international relations. And you know, the word international relations might be deceiving, because when we deal with the Electoral Commission in Swaziland or in Botswana, you know, it's an international relations thing, which is work that we do very regularly. But it also entails work that we do further afield from there. It also, we also look in outreach in terms of election observation and communications. Back home, we have a task team of electoral staff members in the commissions, specialist material developers and educational practitioners that are looking at the materials that we are developing for these elections in all languages as well as in Braille. And again, in this area, we are recording good progress. the trick is always, you know, ensuring that the quality of the material is good, so that the people that are going to receive this material also, you know, are trained, you know, with good materials. That is one aspect of the of assurance that we are working on very hard at the moment. A lot of consultations are taking place, and as we speak, this is one of those consultations at your invitation. That the Commission is undertaking quite a lot of work, you know, concerning elections. This is including work that you know the Commission will undertake as they consult with the Presidency, with ministries and government departments, with provincial legislatures, with organized local government, organized business, organized labor, traditional leadership, youth formations, schools and institutions of tertiary education amongst others. Our stakeholders are wide and varied. The media, you know, is one of the stakeholders that we also consult on an ongoing basis. Arrangements are in place between the Electoral Commission and the Department of Basic Education, where we are dealing with an event that, you know, a process, in fact, that we are very excited about. We will be having, from the 1st to the 7th of October 2013, a Schools Democracy Week across all of the schools in the country. Materials have been developed. Arrangements with the Department of Basic Education are at an advanced stage. We are, in fact, also looking at media partners, you know, to talk about these elections. One of the areas that we were very clear about is the challenge we have with respect to young people, and this is one area that we have looked at, and one of the strategies is to be in all schools so that they are prepared, those that are eligible to register and to vote know what they need to do and where to go so that they can register and vote. In fact, when we are in schools in that week, those who are ready to register, we will even register in that same week. A communication strategy as well as an implementation plan have been approved by the Commission and are now in the rollout phase of our project plans. We have established a national coordinating forum which comprises members of civil society organizations at national and provincial levels. This body seeks to do three things, really. The first one is to address matters concerning civic and voter education in general and the delivery of such services by civil society organizations in particular. They do this work in any event, but what we do need to do is to address and coordinate that kind of work. The second one is to coordinate efforts aimed at proactively addressing conflict management. Conflict is it's an evolving situation. You know, it has moved from traditional conflict to new forms of conflict, and we always have to, you know, to find ways to address those conflicts. And thirdly, it's to encourage election observation, especially by domestic observers. And this is an area that we are working very hard at the moment. On the international relations front, plans to organize a conference with the youth, particularly in the SADC region, are afoot. We are looking at a possible date in later in October. In this instance, we are really going to be bringing youth formations in the SADC region alongside the SADC Electoral Commission's forum to talk about issues pertaining to youth involvement and elections. The conference will be held here in South Africa, and we hope this would be another area that would create interest amongst young people to register and to vote. We have dealt with the communication. In terms of public awareness, an election really is a mobilization of a lot of activities. But one of the things we need to do, and we are going to be unveiling you know, in a month or two, is an election slogan and a logo, which will underpin the 2014 election campaign. Every one of our elections has had a logo and a campaign, and we are hoping that this one will particularly speak to the target groups that we are looking at and make it interesting for them to participate in the election. The components of the plan include outdoor, publicity, which really looks at billboards, wall murals, train station boards, taxis, and rank TV. Those are, the outdoor activities that we are looking at. But there are lots of new forms of media that we are also following. We will deal with print, also communication in terms of posters for registration weekends in particular. But we will have information leaflets, flyers. We'll have, some of the, information in newspapers and magazines as well. Electronic media is one area that is, it's a big media in this country. We cannot ignore radio, both, public and private, but also community radio and television. Television has evolved extensively, from the national broadcast television stations that we know to regional and particularly a number of municipalities that have those facilities. We are going to be looking at those facilities. Digital or online information and publicity is a new area that has taken this country and everywhere else by storm, and we have to be ready to deal with that. In that respect, what you see on the website is going to be made to be portable and phone-friendly in terms of mobile applications, cell phones, iPads, and those kind of things. We are looking at that, and when we launch this election, those platforms will be in place. And mobile communication is a big area in this mix, and it's one that we cannot ignore. It's challenging, but we will have to deal with the challenges. New media in the form of Facebook, Twitter, and all of those other platforms are also areas that we are considering, and in fact, we are already doing work. What we do need to do is be prepared to increase the capacity, particularly when we deal with registration and election, because at the moment, there are people who are using those platforms, but I imagine they are going to increase as we go closer to an election, and that's a situation that we will need to manage. I have indicated that there will be a greater emphasis on social media. It is something we cannot ignore. SFS facility that allows voters to check their voter registration details will continue to be in place. We have it at the moment, and it will continue to be in place. The website, I have indicated that but it will also include quite a number of applications, amongst others, persons that say, I live in this area, where is my correct voting district? They would be able to locate that. They would also be able to say, to check when do I register, when do I vote, and all of that information as it becomes available. They'll also be able to share news and anything that we have updated with respect to developments concerning the electoral calendar on our website. We'll also have a public call center which will be toll-free, which is a facility that particularly appeals to persons that have needs that they need to check, particularly where mobile technology is a challenge. The toll-free number, of course, it's toll-free on a landline. The chairperson spoke about the enforcement of the code of conduct. The commission is required to prescribe the electoral code of conduct, which must be subscribed to by all parties contesting elections and their candidates as well. The code is not enforceable by the electoral commission. It is enforceable by the electoral court. Other forms of prohibited conduct in terms of the Electoral Act are criminal offenses, and these are dealt with by the courts. And we often find, as the chairperson has indicated, that where there are issues connected to the enforcement of the code, people will say, we want to tell the Electoral Commission to do this and that and the other. It is an area that we need to deal with so that people are clear about what we deal with, and what we do not deal with. Previous election experience, as the chair has indicated, suggests that we need to do two things. One is to improve the training of law enforcement officials. We often do so. We will talk to the college for training at the police, to train their trainers, and they will train further. But we do think that in this election, that there are more efforts required to deal with the situation, because we do find that when court cases arise, quite a number of the things that we had thought that would have been enforced don't seem to be, and we do want to look at that, review them, particularly taking into account the volume of court cases that we've had in the past. The chair has discussed the possible exploration of court in this respect, special court in this respect. One of the areas that are key for us in terms of registration is really in the next three slides. And this is very important that we share. In this country, unless you are registered, you cannot vote. And therefore, for us, registration is fundamental, and we have to provide opportunities for voters to register. If we look at Stats SA from the census data that was released last year, you will notice that in the age band 18 to 19, we do have, in terms of state information, 1.5 million eligible persons. These are South African citizens, according to Stats SA, who are in the ages of 18 to 19. But if you look at the voters' roll, those that are registered, we only have 185,000 of them. That represents a 12% registration gap. I mean registration. So there is a gap of about 88% that we need to deal with. It is a big gap that in this age group that we need to deal with. Of course, going into schools and tertiary institutions, we should have quite a lot of that data. But outside of those institutions, that there's quite a large chunk of youth that we also need to address. And that is an area, another area, that we are working at very closely. Not very easy, very difficult, but it is an area that we need to address. In terms of persons between ages 20 and 29, you see that, again, we have 7.5 million, almost 7.6 million. In terms of Stats SA information, we have registered just about 5 million. That's just close to a 2.5 million gap there that we are looking at. And that, again, is another big area that we need to deal with for now. The third one is persons in the age group 30 to 39. The gap there is much smaller. But nevertheless, there's a million people there that we need to also reach. 85% of those persons are registered. And in fact, in terms of the slides that we have provided there, you will see that we even give a provincial breakdown. And I forgot to indicate, if you go back, Stephen, to the slide between the ages of 18 to 19, you will notice that, the metro areas in particular do appear to have a much wider gap, except for, in KwaZulu-Natal. But if one looks at KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, I must say, if one looks at the Western Cape, there's 5% there of registrations. If you look at Gauteng, there's 6% there of registrations. That makes for very interesting reading. And again, this will also make us look at the kind of media that we need to use to reach these people. The same applies to, age gaps 20 to 29. You will see that, again, the Eastern Cape does very well. They have the highest registration proportion of those persons in terms of their province. The Western Cape and Gauteng don't do better, again, in that situation. So that's another area that it's interesting. we provide this thing so that it is clearer for all of us what the challenges are, and we know how best to deal with them. You know, one day when you say, I am targeting metro areas, people will say that your program is very skewed, but you are trying to actually look at what, you know, your greatest need and that which you need to address. In the age groups 30 to 39, again, housing there you look at, and Western Cape, very interesting and consistent through the process. And the Eastern Cape amongst that is consistent with high numbers of registered voters. When you look at the age group 60 to 69, and I must qualify this there, that where you have 100%, it does not mean that we won't go there and register people. We, you know, that the gap is so small, and yet we will go. But of course, we will, you know, the effort that we put in, again, we'll see to address that gap. We are very satisfied there. It's 13,000 people that we are really looking at countrywide. So, you know, the gap gets smaller as we get to that point. When one looks at the voters' role at the moment, at the 5th of August, we had 23 million people registered on the voters' roll. This number really takes into account all of the registration work that we undertake between general elections, which does not have a high yield. Although people are made aware, we go to schools, we visit communities. When by-elections are held, we register voters. It's a very small yield that we get. And, you know, that means that we have to look at registration weekends because they give us a good yield. We've also done phase one of targeted communication and registration. This is in keeping with demarcation, changes in the demarcation processes, but also population development. And in that process in March this year, we yielded 310 new registrations, or total registrations. And we are going to do phase two of that process, where we will be looking at a registration gap between what state SA say and what we have on the voters' roll. And where we have gaps of 60% and more, we will be going into those specific communities for 4 days in September. We want to do this so that we give people again an opportunity. Where we don't find them at home, we will then be able to say to them that we were in this community, we want you to, you know, when registration weekend comes, we want you to, you know, to be sure that you are on the voters' roll and you have checked your details, or to register at this facility in this community. I have indicated that, you know, general registration weekends have a proven record of high voter registration yields, and therefore they are an integral part of our planning in this election. The voters' role in this country remains a fundamental contributor to the credibility of elections. When people talk about elections, there were recent elections closely or, you know, across our borders, and one of the major issues that has been spoken about has been the voters' role. Our voters' roll is regularly updated against the National Population Register at least once a month. If there are new persons that you know, have registered, they are put on the voters' roll. If there are persons that have unfortunately passed away, they are removed from the active segment of the voters' roll. In certain months, we do it more than once because we have by-elections as of the date, and we run normal month-end processes, and therefore we get to update it more than once. I must say, you know, notwithstanding what the chairperson has said, in those three areas in KwaZulu-Natal, quite a number of steps have been taken to deal with some of those challenges. And we put a great deal of effort in ensuring that our voters' roll remains very, very credible. We maintain audit trails of all voters or registered voters since the first voters' roll was compiled. If a person has changed the registration details 20 times, we will be able to point that to the second to which that person has been changing those details, and we will show an audit trail from the first voters' roll being compiled. And therefore, we get to hear quite a lot of arguments about somebody changed my details, so, you know, I came to register on that date at that time and we haven't captured that information is readily available. The voter's roll, as we say, it's always available for inspections. Every office, municipal electoral office of the IEC, every provincial office, at the national office, if people want to check segments of the voter's roll, they are free to do so at any point. Copies of the voter's roll are provided to political parties and candidates contesting elections consistently. Whether they be by-elections, whether they be national and provincial elections, we have or general elections of municipal councils, we provide that information. The loss of registered voters on the voter's roll as a result of death has decreased significantly in comparison to the last national and provincial elections. At the moment, Sai, I think you are recording about 28,000 voters a month. It's still a large number. But there was a time when we were at 45,000 a month. So it has been a significant improvement compared to where we were previously. And that should help, keep high levels of registrations in the voters' form. We are indicating how we have been progressing over the years, taking just into consideration the national and provincial elections. Of course, we've taken out the general elections of municipal councils. But the point we want to make there is how the voters' roll has increased from one election to the other. If you compare the 2004 elections to the 1999 elections, we increased in enrollment in the voters' roll by almost 14%. A comparison between 2009 and 2004 yielded 12.13%. As we speak, and as we've indicated last week on the 5th, we had 23 million South Africans there, and we are hoping that we should at least have over a million of those of the people that are not registered being able to register for the elections coming. The registration of political parties and liaison with these political parties is an ongoing event. People see in government gazettes notices of publications by parties that wish to register. I must indicate to you that is a process we never close. People say to us, when are you going to close for the registration of political parties for the next election? That day, as I said, we do not close. If a party wishes to contest, they just need to register on or before the time on which the nomination of candidates will be closing. If they are registered by that date, they should be able to submit their nominations. We currently have 225 parties. Dr. Mamalula informs me, he deals with these things, registered. Of this, 140 are registered and can contest national and provincial elections because they are registered in the national sphere, and 85 of those are in the municipal sphere of government. We do not have the registration of parties taking place at provincial level. It's either at the local government sphere or the national sphere. I indicated that party registration is an ongoing business. They have to be registered to contest an election. You don't say, I've advertised, I'm going to register in due course. Let me, in the meantime, participate in an election. It doesn't work that way. Parties with representation in the national, provincial, or municipal sphere of government are represented in party liaison committees, which we convene at national, provincial, and municipal level, respectively. There are 2,517 such meetings that we have planned in this financial year. 12 of this will take place in the national, at national level. 108 across, at provincial levels, and 2,397 in all municipalities. This is a number we follow very closely. Of course, democracy is strengthened when at the lowest level, representation is taken seriously. And that's an area that that we are dealing with. PLCs at the local level can be a challenge, but we are talking to parties, and this is an area that requires quite a bit of encouragement for political parties to send their representatives regularly. The Electoral Commission has also scheduled at least 2 meetings with non-represented parties at all levels of government. It is important that when we go to an election, particularly those parties that have formed or have been in existence but have never contested an election, know exactly what to deal with when elections come. Often information gaps can arise that lead to challenges, and we don't need to be dealing with those challenges when it's 2 minutes after 5 and we have closed the office. We don't want those challenges to arise at that point. It's best we deal with them in advance, that they know what they need to deal with. You will know that to contest elections, one has to pay an election deposit. The commission will be considering that aspect, and in one of the meetings in the future, we should be able to then say, the commission has come to a determination. But at this point, that matter has not been finalized. That it's not finalized, it's not a major problem. In fact, quite a lot of the work we are doing, we're trying to do way in advance at this stage. I spoke about expansion staff in the offices of the Electoral Commission. I now move to election staff. These are people that will be out in the voting stations or registration stations on the day. We will be recruiting in excess of 250,000 people. These are people that will make the organization out there. They will be the face of the organization. And it's really fearsome to imagine that people you will know for less than 10 days in the entire period represent you and are becoming your face. And that's where we are now emphasizing quite a lot of care in terms of how we select those people, but also how we train them. Training programs have been rolled out, and all election officials will be trained before voting day, all of the 250,000. Now, in practice, it works out very differently. We have people, and in this country, one has to take into account that you have to look at young people, you have to look at the unemployed, you have to look at people that have management skills, you have to look at all of those categories, people with disabilities and so on and so forth, in the makeup of this voting station, in the electoral staff. But between us training them and election day, quite a number of changes can happen. And so in effect, we end up training more people. And sometimes the people that we train may not eventually be available. But as a matter of course, we do not just train those numbers that we need. We go slightly above those numbers that we would be needing on election day, just in case we have the situations. National and provincial trainer workshops are concluded as we speak for registration. Modular training is currently underway for registration staff for this purpose. Training will also be ordered for party agents and police officers. Party agents are an important part of the makeup for ensuring the credibility of this election, and we take special interest in them being trained. Political parties do provide training, their own training, but we've always made it available to political parties that we will, as we train our own people, we're quite happy to train their representatives as well. It is very interesting because as we train our people, we find that party agents are not there often, and we have been informed by parties that so early in the process, quite a lot of changes may still, occur in the makeup of the persons that they wish to have trained. And so you do find that they train their staff later on in the process. As far as we possibly can, we do facilitate that training ourselves. One of the areas that, we explain every election but refuses to go away, and we will not get tired of doing this, it's part of the work we need to do, and part of the independence and the trust we need to build in the electoral process. There is criteria that we have developed for the recruitment of persons that may work in stations. And this criteria has been developed after extensive consultations with political parties through party liaison committees. We will view that criteria. We will ensure that persons we appoint as presiding officers and deputy presiding officers in particular, every one of them will be open to persons that may object to them not meeting the criteria that we have agreed to. And if those objections are upheld, those persons will not work in the voting stations. There will be a day when all TLCs in the country will take place and look at this aspect of the work, and parties submit objections to persons that we intend employing as presiding officers and presiding officers and don't meet the criteria. And we do take that situation into account. The logistics of an election, of course, it's a big makeup of any election. And time, they say, runs out in the beginning and not at the end. We try and make up for the time right in the beginning, not in the end. Procurement processes for election materials. I'm talking election materials. Are already underway. We continue to invite services through tender processes for elections. The majority of our registration materials is already in our warehouses. We have already acquired those. That's how seriously we take this work. Members of the commissions have approved the design and security features of the ballot paper as is required in terms of the law. Those are processes. If you say an election may take place on the 21st of April, to imagine that kind of progress has already been attained gives you the kind of feel of where we are at in terms of the work that we do. It is actually very good to talk about that. Election material is planned for delivery from January, with that election, which can take place as early as April. So from January, we will be dealing with election materials in our security storages, in our normal warehousing facilities, and so on and so forth. We do have our warehouse facilities in place. We indicate that we have 8 of the provincial warehouses. There is one that we are finalizing. We do have a facility, but it is smaller for the requirements for this election, and we are looking at migrating from that warehouse to another. One of the issues that have been linked to elections is the amount of reserve material, particularly ballot papers, that you have in an election. Our commission takes this very seriously. We plan our elections fairly carefully so that we do not have too much of excess stuff flying around. But we do also have challenges, as you know. In this elections coming, we know that in the equivalent election in 2009, people were shopping for shorter queues. We provide in the voting stations for the numbers of people that we have there with a small buffer, and suddenly somebody calls you and says, where are you? And you say, no, I'm in my voting station, and it appears there are 200 people ahead of me. Says, come down my street, I'm the 10th in the queue, and people begin to chase queues. Then it has implications for our provision of voting stations. It is a challenge we have to embrace, but we have to balance with the materials that we provide, as buffer stock in those instances. Tight security measures are maintained. When we talk about ICT, this is another area of the work that appears to raise a number of interesting comments. We are calm about this because, in essence, our elections are very, very transparent. Our IT systems are developed in a way that seeks to engender confidence in the elections and not to hide, stuff in the elections. But one of the things that we do, we take the security measures for elections very seriously. We have been, undertaking practices and drills to see how our IT systems, ICT systems, will withstand, any challenges that is common to IT systems. And we have run from backup sites, just closed off the normal site that we run from at national and provincial offices. And for 10 days in April, we ran from a backup site. It was one of the most successful drills that we have undertaken. Of course, when we do an election, we run from more than two sites, and for security reasons, of course, we will not discuss the full details. But what I'm saying is, people say ICT systems can be sensitive to this kind of attack. A number of my colleagues will see when there's a challenge, but we hope that to yourselves, you will not see that, because we'll simply switch from the one side seamlessly to another side without you noticing those delays. Tender invitations are going to be issued shortly, in fact, in October, for ICT audit firms to undertake the independent test of the result systems. Political parties are often, and will also, even in this instance, where political parties have ICT capability or companies that they trust, we invite them to come and test our systems for a period of time. In the past, this was a facility that was used extensively by political parties, but they have since said to us, we no longer want to incur this kind of cost. When you do what you meant to do, and in the past we have not found anything being a deviation from what you have said you're doing. So on our part, we will continue to have ICT companies that will audit our systems. They'll try and hack them, they'll try and see if they produce the kind of result that they should produce, and they will give us a certificate which we will share with political parties. Where they find that there is a vulnerability, we will fix that vulnerability before we go to elections. We often hear that in elections, ICT is a problem. This has not worked and that has not worked. We tried in South Africa to ensure that whenever we put systems in place, not only new, but even the old ones, we do what we call a dry run, where on a particular day, every one of our offices in the country will sit on the system for, let's say, 2 hours. We will stress test the systems. We will almost have a process similar to what we have on election day, capturing results and, capturing, scanning result slips and all of that to see if our systems can withstand that pressure and will still produce the result that they should produce when an actual election takes place. In other words, if a result slip is captured, it'll come out on the other side in the same way, and somebody will be able to pull it out and compare to what they have captured. We'll have two such processes before elections. That should give you the confidence that we cannot go into an election and say technology has failed, we didn't know, we never had the opportunity to do this and that. In collaboration with the Department of Home Affairs, we have already tested the smart card. We have undertaken those tests, and I'm pleased to say to you that we have found those tests have been successful. We do expect that when we go to elections, some persons may register with smart card and others may vote on smart card as well. That process is already tested. and we will be ready. If somebody takes our offices next week to register with a smart card, we should be able to register them. There are going to be small changes that we're going to make. A smart card is not the same as an identity book. Currently, when you register, we print out a sticker and we put it into your ID book. We have to find a way to deal with that aspect when we deal with a smart card. But that's something that we are confident we will resolve pretty soon. Extensive options are on the table in the institution to deal with those kind of developments. We have systems that we are developing which will be in place for the notification of special vote applications by voters in the country and those that are abroad who may have registered to vote. We are trying to make those really easily accessible through systems on our website and so on and so forth. And again, I'm very pleased to say that a number of options are on the table and developments are fairly advanced in that respect. In every voting station in this country on election day, every barcode scanning unit, the ZipZip, will have the full segment of the voter's roll on it. The person operating that ZipZip will identify themselves using the identity number so that we know who it is, and we'll always compare that to the person that we have employed to initiate. They will then scan that onto a copy of the voting district map, which will then locate it like a GPS will do. It will locate that barcode scanning unit to that voting district, and will automatically update that segment of the voter's roll for that voting district there as a local segment. Anybody coming to the voting station who is not registered there, we will pick up. But we must remember, in this election, if you are within the province, of registration, people will be allowed to vote if things remain the way they are. And so it will, amongst others, check that persons from outside of the province don't get to exercise some of the rights that would be ordinarily available for persons in that province. So I'm just saying this so that you have the feel of the measures that are in place to deal with this. But in addition, when persons come to voting stations on election day, we often look at when do people come, how do we manage and schedule our staff capacity to deal with queues in the voting station, particularly later when voting stations are about to close and queues are forming. So we do also have a voter participation application that we are loading on the voters from. When persons come, we'll scan the ID book and it will tell us that so-and-so has been at the station at that time. And right at the end, we will have that data and we will say to you, South Africans who are young, who happen to be named, come to stations at this time in this places. That is the kind of information we will make available to yourselves. It will also help you in understanding how we vote as a nation, not in terms of who we voted for, but in terms of, when are the busiest periods, when are the less busy periods, where do we have challenges of voting stations that close late because queues, people go there later, and where do we finish it? All of that is in hand as we speak. In terms of addressing the credibility of an election, it is a matter that is ongoing, a matter that we do not take for granted. Measures have been taken, as I've indicated, to strengthen party agents and their role at voting stations. There will be training for them to be able to accept their roles in the voting stations. I'm told that, earlier on in 1994 and 1999, you could manage to, if this was a voting station and the presiding officer was sitting where the chair is sitting, you could say to the party agent, sit in that corner and watch at a distance what they are doing there. That time it's over. Party agents are strengthened to do and undertake the role that they need to undertake in voting stations as they should. We are encouraging that at the Electoral Commission. And yes, if all of us understand that it makes the duty of the presiding officer even easier. But 9 out of 10 times it can also make it difficult. But that's the way it should be. We should vote and confidently knowing that we're doing the right thing. Counting in all of our elections takes place at all of the voting stations where voting took place. And shortly after the closure of voting, counting will commence in all of the voting stations. That will be so until a result slip is filled in and party agents are able to sign next to their party results what they have witnessed. Result slips will be forwarded to areas where they will be captured. We capture in the municipal electoral offices. We don't capture in the voting stations. But that process, it's another drill that we have undertaken often. There is a transparent, tamper-proof bag which will be used for this purpose, and party agents and security normally will accompany that to the capturing center. One of the things that we obviously do is that at the place where results are captured, there are also party agents that we accredit there who will be watching the process of receiving all of these transparent envelopes, seeing how they are recorded, reconciled, they are scanned into the system, they are captured, they are audited, and so on and so forth. All of that in the name of ensuring that the results of the election as evidenced at the voting stations don't change between the voting stations and the time when the results are declared. There are measures we take as the Electoral Commission to ensure that the systems we develop, which have already been audited as I've indicated, also have parameters to pick up anomalies or exceptions that are not visible to the eye. Let me give you an example. If a voting station has 3,000 people registered, and for some reason somebody enters on the result slip and everybody signs, party agents say this is correct, instead of saying 3,000 people, they say 30,000 people or 300,000 people, and it's captured. The system, even if parties and everybody have signed and said we saw this, the system will say, there are 3,000 people who are registered in this area, but you have actually, captured 30,000. It will tell us that, and at that point we will stop and we will look at what is this, and we will deal with that kind of anomaly. Those kind of arrangements are also in place. So if you're worried that, we suddenly will have, in a country that has 24, 25 million people registered, we may have 50 million people registered, voting. That will not happen, because we will then pick them. We have results auditors that we invite or we secure through public tender processes. These are auditors that get people at every one of the areas where we capture results. Once the results have been captured by our own staff, and the staff will pull out the results slip, capture it on the system, and enter. Then the system, the screen will be blank, and ask them to capture the same result again. If they capture consistently against what they captured in the first place, the result is accepted. But if they capture the second time around and some numbers don't match, the system will say, no, I can't accept this result. Start all over again. So it's a double blind tele system. Once they have done that, the result are now available for the auditor to audit this result. And the auditor will then pull out with a unique logon code that this auditor has been allocated, will pull out that result slip. The results will be on screen. They will match. He will match the copy of the results with what has been captured. And if that is correct, he will, with his PIN code, then approve those results. And those results, if there are no exceptions to it, that result becomes available to all of us. It doesn't go to the chairperson first and say, "Chairperson, do you like this result or not? Members of the commission, do you like?" All of us will see that result at the same time across the nation. What am I saying? There will never be a result that is left for the chairperson to authorize on her own, or the chief electoral officer, or the deputy chief electoral officer, or a member of the commission. And I think it's another measure that is important for our elections. Results lists are scanned. Anyone who says, "I was at that voting station, I saw the counting, I witnessed the signing of the results list," has an opportunity later to call that results list to be sure that the results list that they signed is actually the one that we have captured in the system. So anybody can put it on in the comfort of your home. If you have internet at the results center where political parties will have representation, anywhere, people will have that copy of the results list. Members of the media are given full access to these facilities so that they can anonymize. Anybody is free to bring an error to our attention. And we will deal with it if there is such an issue. Part of the election process involves complaints being raised and tracked by the Electoral Commission. Where persons complain that I was at the voting station, for some reasons I was turned away, or somebody refuses to admit me as a voter, whatever the case might be. Those issues we capture into the system, and we track against time, and we must resolve them in time for on election day or before results are issued. Those processes are in place and the systems are ready to deal with it. One of the processes that takes place once proclamation day or elections have been proclaimed is that the voters' roll on that day, as we have it on that day, will be the voters' roll that we use for elections. If proclamation happens by 10 in the morning, by midnight we close the voters' roll. So people often come to our voting stations and say, or to our municipal electoral offices and say, "I did not, but now I've had this an election now on this day." We will register them, close of business that day. But on that day, of course, the voters roll becomes the voters roll. An election timetable will be drafted on the day that the election is proclaimed, and the party liaison committee will meet at national level like the following day. We discuss these things with political parties on an ongoing basis, and political parties like us, are fully briefed on these things, and they know when they should be ready to meet with us at short notice. The important part of that meeting is to look at the draft electoral timetable as a consultation process, because shortly after we have done so, we will then publish that election timetable in the Gazette, and that then becomes our reference point for all of us, and we went from there. So there is nothing hidden away from anybody. It is published, it's a public document, and parties have had the opportunity to engage with it. The electoral timetable, of course, will set dates, amongst others, for the closing of nomination of candidates and the payment of election deposits. It'll set a date for the notifications by voters abroad. It will set application dates for special votes in the Republic. It will do special voting dates for voters that will not be in the Republic, and so on and so forth. Whilst on those special votes will be conducted abroad, and transported back to the Republic for security support and counting later. Special votes conducted in the Republic will be kept in secure facilities identified for this purpose in every municipality. You will recall that in the municipal elections, we had 2 days of special votes where one day we had gone to visit people in their homes, wherever they are, in hospitals and so on and so forth. But on another day, they would then come to the office of the presiding officer, and then the third day will be vote election day. For the duration of that period, we have that onerous task of keeping the ballot securely. And that is a matter I will rest at that point. I will not deal with the details for obvious reasons, but there is a lot of security arrangement that we undertake, and that process is underway as I speak to you. The counting of special votes takes place once voting stations are closed and counting has commenced. Planning for election day itself, on that day over 200,000 people will be working and on duty in the voting stations. We will have our national results operation centers at national level and one provincial operation center in every province, which will serve as hubs for electoral activity and reference points for the media, for political parties, and for ourselves to engage on any matter that may be necessary. Voting station hours are determined by the Commission in advance and will be made known. We have used 7 to 9. It may change, but this will be determined. Counting, as I've indicated, takes place once voting operation ceases on the day. The results compilation process begins at the voting stations. What do we do once voting day has gone and it's passed? Of course, it's one sigh of relief because one major project has just completed, but another important one begins, and that's when we need to be very alert. The processing of results begins, the capturing, the verification, and the transmission of results. So on the night of voting day onwards, we begin to receive this result. In fact, at the Commission, we don't have the opportunity to go and sleep between 8 and 9, but political parties tell us that once they're head-to-head, they have witnessed quite a high level of voting activity, they go and rest because they want to see this result now. For the next 38 hours, there's very little sleep whilst this results are coming. Complaints and objections also begin to come in by their numbers. And at the Commission, members of the Commission look at the objections, in the administration look at the complaints, and so, we determine those processes. Once we are through with that process, a result will be announced. The leaderboard will indicate which is the party that got the most votes, and you will see the numbers of the votes that they've got. But the seat allocation is something that we then need to translate the votes into the seat that parties have won, either in the National Assembly or the provincial legislature. Once we have done that, both the results and the allocated seats will be gazetted. Of course, there's a night that the Commission will announce the results. And all of us are very pleased on that night that we will go and sleep finally. And it's really a great day. In conclusion, there are a number of things that we have not spoken about. But I'm sure when questions come, we can deal with. The national and provincial elections in 2014 are the 20th anniversary of our electoral democracy in South Africa. We plan to have them to be special, to be memorable, to be credible, and to be very pleasant. People must experience that election as a pleasant election. There are a number of things we do, particularly with respect to building capacity of other commissions on the continent, particularly within SADC, but even further. We will have persons that are attached to the commission for technical exchange that we have not spoken about. We do receive quite a number of those that we bring on board. There is a chance that in 2014, given the importance of that election, that number may increase and perhaps a program may be set up. But what am I saying? I'm saying that it is also an opportunity for us to impact and to share capacity with those that are looking at our processes, those that are, you know, looking at opportunities for training for their staff members at the Commission, and we will provide those opportunities. There have been indications that there may even be people from the northern part of the continent. There have been interesting discussions. We had commissions from Egypt. We've had coming to this country and consulting with members of the commission. We've had inquiries in Tunisia, Libya, and all of those places. So we look at those. There are also a number of challenges that we deal with. The gap on registration remains one of the big challenges that we have to overcome. It's not as easy as saying if you come and register, we'll give you a bag, and so you know you have the people between 18 and 19 coming to register. We have to find interesting ways of getting them to come and register. Registration remains a thing that you do in person, and people have the perception, particularly young, I imagine, that it's going to be a long queue. In fact, we have to brand the message that it's not, it's very easy. In fact, you are in and out in less than 5 minutes for the registration. The chairperson has indicated that concluding the legislative amendment on time is a key thing because it affects training of staff, it affects arrangements that we may need to make, where there are other measures that we have not provided for that in the process of this amendment being considered, we now need to provide for. That also must be built into the process. Demarcation disputes are an issue. There are a number of issues in this country where demarcation issues that are lingering just get amplified at election time. There's still the materials of this place. We think they're gone in between elections, but when elections come, they erupt again. The mooters of this place, you know, they do, you know, the bushback riches and so on. There are quite a number of those in the Northern Cape, in the Northwest. In the last elections, we've seen quite a few of those. So those are issues that we keep an eye. There have been issues in the Free State very recently and so on and so forth. So those are issues that do worry us and we keep an eye on them. Tensions and protests within communities related to all sorts of things arise, and at election time they provide an opportunity for people to then you know, say, we're not voting unless somebody does this, or IEC, don't come here until somebody addresses this. So those are some of the challenges we can look at. We have spoken about the meaningful presence and participation of party agents as well as observers in these elections. We must be frank. We like to be policed, not because we think we were not doing the job, but we know it engenders credibility in the work that we do, and we can never be complacent about that. There are quite a number of things that we have shared, and Chairperson, and I thank you for, you know, it's taken just over an hour, 20 minutes. But an election is something you can speak about for a long period of time. And from where we sit, we enjoy the work that we do, and we like sharing it with people. Perhaps in closing, I must say, the task of preparing for this election is in hand. And I imagine if there's something you're concerned about, I was asked to do the presentation, but the answers come from them. Jefferson, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, for the lengthy presentation, but you've covered most of the work that is facing you as the ITC as well as the political institute. You and the chairperson touched on a number of pertinent issues, and I'm not going to go through the list because the list is very long. Our concern, I'm sure, is the parties with the issue that you raised, chairperson, of the credible voter fraud that is of concern to us. I think as parties, we need to look into this. And also you raised the three areas in KZN that has the problem that you didn't name as to which areas are those. If you could maybe just enlighten us regarding those areas. Honourable members, I noticed Dr. Miller, followed by Honourable McIntosh, followed by Honourable Marcelo, followed by Honourable Peterson Madonna, followed by Honourable Sassi Bolme, followed by Honourable Bosman, Honourable Gam will be the last. In that order, please. Oh, followed by Mema Tebe, you will be the last. In that order. Dr. Miller?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start off by congratulating the Electoral Commission for a very comprehensive presentation. We've become used to the Electoral Commission doing an excellent job in South Africa with regard to elections, and we are very proud of that. So I think from my side, I would like to say congratulations. I think it's quite clear that a lot of work has already been done, and that the Commission is well on its way in terms of its own planning to deliver a successful election. I want to ask just two questions, basically. The first is, for me, it's a joyous day to listen to the IEC and to see in the presentation that we're talking about South Africans abroad being able to vote. We've fought a long and hard battle to get to this point. But obviously, the provisions will be in the Amendment Act. But the Amendment Act in Clause 6 makes provision for the fact that the details of that needs to be sorted out from the Commission side. And all I would like to know at this stage, if there are any indications in terms of what the Commission has in mind, because we're talking about the registration of people abroad, making it possible for people to register, as well as then to vote in terms of the practicality. That's the first one. The second question, Chairperson, deals with presiding officers, and I know it was mentioned in the presentation that people who have been involved with a political aim or with political parties, etc., should not be allowed to participate as presiding officers. My concern deals with members who are members of unions who are affiliated with political parties and who clearly express their view that their union support this or that political party. People in that respect serving as presiding officers. I've got a concern and I'd like to know what the Commission says. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Miller. I wanted to appeal to Honourable Members not to deal with the proposed amendment, because some of us don't even know what Clause 6 is all about. If you could please answer what he has asked, but I would appeal to other members not to go into the proposed amendment, because it hasn't been brought before the committee. Can I have the Honourable McIntosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, somebody's once said a parliamentary democracy with a regular, free and fair elections is surely the finest flowering of human civilization. And Madam Chair, I think our IEC is the handmaiden and the servant of us achieving that finest flower of civilization. And I thank you for that they made this presentation right here. I've got just one comment and then one or two questions. I'm very pleased to see that I fall in the category of 99% registered voters. So that's great. The Abakolosi problem. I'm concerned, Madam Chair, that the IEC, and I think the point that the Honourable Chair Lady made about
looking at following up on these political parties that may have contravened rules by bussing in people. And I'm aware this is a ward election, it's not a national election, so it's quite important to know that. But I think the IEC must be very careful that it doesn't become the meat and the sandwich, where in fact it's quite clear that political parties are either breaking the law or abusing the system, because it's easy to point the finger at them. But I think that the IEC has that in mind. I have two questions. I only need two now. I was going to have three, but I think Dr. Mulder's covered me on that. I was a little puzzled on page 28 when our CEO talked about province-wide and voting and the zip-zips recording each voting station. And please explain if I have misunderstood it. Is the if I'm in Vryheid on business and I happen to live and be registered in Pietermaritzburg, which is all within one province, I am then, as I understood it, free to vote on that day at any voting station in Vryheid or anywhere else in the province of KZN. That's my concern. Then that partly links into the Abakulusi issue, because if you can vote anywhere, then unless it's specifically a ward council election, then it's just a little puzzling to me, and maybe they could explain that. And then on page 38, you mentioned observers. I don't know if the IEC has a policy on observers, in the sense that, you know, some observers I think are important for credibility, but I do think you can't have everybody coming along because they want to have a nice holiday in South Africa to observe our elections, and who pays and all that sort of thing. But if you have a policy on that, and please don't misunderstand me, I think it's very good to have observers. But what, do you have a policy on observers? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say that the presentation is well crafted and well presented. Thanks to the CEO and the whole commission, including the Chairperson, who briefed us very well. But I think the Chairperson was cutting was because the stumble of Chedi said that my school now is in that because my dad is number 1, 2, and 3. And then you assist us in terms of how you intend dealing with that. Instead, she spoke about Abakulusi and an anecdotal incident, which I think, if there is more meat, please give it to us. The area of concern, obviously, is that when we deal with the amendments that will be catered in the, because I have so many issues to raise, which I think I will have them for that time. Hopefully it will be soon, Honorable Chairperson. The use of a smart card, I think the committee, it will help us to go and examine that process of the use of a smart card for the next year's election. Testing one smart card or more, which we don't know how many were tested for the exercise. I know when you talk about the numbers in an election with 23 or 25 million people, we don't even know how many will have the smart card. So we just need to make sure that there are no technical glitches in this process. Chairperson, the other area which I want to bring to the attention of the Commission, the use of media by political parties. There's been concerns before. I think you'll appreciate that the political parties have come to the Commission before, between 2009 and to date. And obviously there has been some improvement. But we would like to appeal to the Commission that please engage ICASA, please engage the public broadcasters. The use of public broadcasters in a polarized way, in a biased way, during the election does affect the manner in which people look at the election. Sorry, we don't want a situation where election becomes a one-party dominance kind of an exercise. Everybody should be given a chance in the especially in the public broadcasting platforms. And I think before we've seen that there's been this event organized by the public broadcasters themselves, but what you call them, debates, you know, arranged by the public broadcasters. That is something else, but the reality is when the platforms in the rallies and particular events of political parties, they should be fairly covered to ensure that participatory democracy is guaranteed in this particular election. I think the fact that it is the 20th anniversary of our young democracy, we should all be proud and make sure we make it memorable and we celebrate it. Chair, I think I will park it there. Obviously, when there is a follow-up on the responses, we will deal with that.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say also that the presentation from the IEC was really good and the presentation was well presented, really. But I just have got, I think, two questions here. I just wanted to know, budgeting seems to still be allocated across two elections for the foreseeable future. Has there been any indication whether the debate around a single election will ever manifest? My second one, I am really happy that educational practitioners have been established to develop materials in all languages as well as Braille. It's really good progress which has been made indeed. My question is, are there people with disabilities from the staff which is being recruited and trained? If yes, I just want to know how many. And I want to know too, is IEC reaching the 2% target in employing people with disabilities? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine was on the credibility of the voting panel. I think we covered that. But apart from that, on slide 26, bullet number 5, on the National Warehouse and 8 provincial warehouses, does that mean the 9 provinces sharing the warehouse for the national office? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation was quite marvelous. And we really appreciate what the IC has done for us. Chair, there are two issues, in fact three. One is on ID and ID smart cards. Basically to say, are we saying, because the manner in which it has been, the message has been taken through the media, it's like by then we shall be having ID smart cards. In a situation where not all of us have it, is the system ready to then continue using the old ID book so that we correct the message that is going around? Second creature is the, of which I'm not sure whether IC is responsible or the parties would be responsible for that, the security of voters in the vicinity of the voting station. You remember the parties will be displaying some few meters away from the demarcated area. And at that level, you may find that there are issues happening there. The other one is the voters' role. We had previously we've requested that at least biannually we should get an update in terms of the situation of the voters' role. I don't know how far IEC is with that. Basically, for us not to pick up at the only at the election time the changes that are there on the voters' roll. And this one is a legal issue in terms of actually explaining the who is allowed to visit the voting station during the voting, other than the party agents that are already in the voting station and the presiding and the electoral staff. That should be clarified clearly, because some of the parties seem not to understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I must say, I must also say that I think it seems that the IEC is quite well prepared for this important election that is looming. Just two questions. One is pertaining to registration. It is, of course, a great concern that people between 18 and 19 years of age, that so many have not been registered as well as those in their 20s. What exactly are the registration plans of the IEC in terms of dates? Have you decided on that? You indicated that in September there will be some registration activity. How many registration weekends will we have? Are there indications as to exactly when that will take place and so on? And secondly, aren't we a bit old-fashioned that we are not making provision for something like online registration also? Or are there too many concerns in that regard? I'm sure if something like that would be introduced, many of these people that are not registered will do so quite quickly, and we won't have that problem. Secondly, the position still is, and I'm not referring to the legislation that we are about to receive, Chair, but the position still is that if you vote, as I understand it, in another province than the one where you have been registered, then you are only allowed to vote for the national, in the national election, and not also for the particular provincial election of the province that you're from. What exactly are the reasons today? Are there reasons that it was impractical and too difficult and so on still applicable today? Or have we reached the stage where one could look at perhaps changing that, that kind of provision in the legislation? Thank you.
Another one,
Kevin.
Thank you, Chair.
Mine is just a concern regarding the limit of the number of political parties registered in the IEC. Because I'm just concerned, 225, there's so many. You can't just say, every board you have a this party, my party. For instance, in other countries, there were only two political parties. There were three, maybe in America, there were only two. Even in Zimbabwe, there were two. But South Africa, 225. Now it's too much. And also people who they are born in South Africa but relocated to other countries abroad, they got dual citizenship. Are they allowed to vote? Fine. Maybe let's say they are relocated to Australia. Should I vote in Australia or in South Africa? Because you said they are allowed to vote at the IEC. You just have to make a legislation or regulation also tell us, clarify us as a country that what should we do. I'm just concerned about this approach notice. And lastly, it's question of people in South Africa. They said after 5 years you are a citizen of this country, whereas maybe I'm born in Malawi or them, but I'm allowed to vote. I'm a South African. I just want to be terrified on this traces. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mr. President. Ms. Kakula and Ms. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chairperson and honorable members for your questions. I will respond rather to a few questions and my colleagues will pick up on those that I want to respond to. The credibility of the voters' roll, there are three areas of concern. Maintain the framework and Ward 29 in Kwamashu and Josini. But we have to understand the point that the credibility of the voters' role in these three areas really became a problem for by-elections. So it's not a widespread problem that will even affect the credibility of the voters' role for the national and provincial elections, because as you know, they will use a different system. So we have to be focused and correct the perception that we're talking about the general credibility problem. Credibility insofar as it relates to the by-election and in just these three wards. Abakulusi, of course, was postponed by a court order, but Ward 29, Kwamashu and Josini, we picked up the anomalies ourselves in the voting pattern, and we decided to investigate those. So that's what it is. I'm not even sure if we would want to talk in detail about our committee. We shouldn't, because it's sub judice. There is a case before the Constitutional Court. Mm-hmm. So I deliberately avoided going into detail of the kind of investigation that we did, and so because we have to submit papers to court on the 20th of this month, where we'll give details of what has been done and so on. I think the issue of presiding officers, Dr. Nore, maybe the slide presentation did not give us the full criteria that we have come up with, because that criteria also says that if you're an office bearer for an organization that is affiliated to a political party, then you will not be eligible to be appointed as a presiding officer. So that takes care of your concern, to say that people who are office bearers of organizations affiliated to political parties. But we also have to be very clear here that we have to, it's a delicate balance that we have to give here, because we live in a constitutional democracy where there is freedom of association. Mm-hmm. So we cannot say that whoever belongs to a trade union cannot be considered. We're targeting people who are politically active and who are office bearers of political parties or organizations with political affiliation. So we have tried to the best of our ability in consultation with the political parties through the PLC to take care of this issue. Honorable McIntosh is not here. But there's an appeal that we have to make to everybody, all South Africans. We do know that in the national elections, the law allows people to vote anywhere. But we know the chaos that this led to in 2009, because people were trying to avoid queues, and the media also was telling people, especially in urban areas, that, you know, in this particular station there is no queue. Go to that, and that confused the whole system, which led to the perception that we ran out of ballot papers. So as it is, although the law says that you can, you know, vote outside where you registered, but our first prize is to get people to vote where they are registered, because that's how we prepare ourselves logistically. We know that in Station A you have so many people, and we provide for that number of people registered plus a markup. But if people are going to be voting, then we run out of vote ballot papers, and it becomes very, very difficult. The observer policy and the issue of election holiday happens. We our election observer program is governed by legislation. To say who can come and observe, but when people come and say they want to come and observe, it's very difficult. But we issue an invitation, let me say, to our sister organizations in particular, electoral commissions. We don't pay for them. But other intergovernmental structures are invited to observe through the Department of DECO. You know, people like the AU, people like SADC, and those intergovernmental organizations are not invited by us. They are invited to observe our elections by DECO. But we don't pay for observers. We are not going to talk about amendments at all, because I think that the opportunity will come, as the chairperson has indicated, the bill will come before this committee, and I'm sure we'll be invited to make a presentation. The use of the media is an issue that has preoccupied us. You do know that through the PLC, in the run-up to an election, we invite the public broadcaster, we invite ICASA to come to the PLC to come and explain how they're going to be allocating time and issues of equitable distribution of airtime and so on. But on our own, as an own initiative, I think 2 months ago or less, we had a workshop with the media, and we invited all the media houses, including private, public, and digital community, and so on. And we said to them, they must look at the possibility of adopting a voluntary code of conduct on coverage of elections, which will be theirs, and which they will be able to enforce through their own structures in how they're going to report. The meeting went well, but all the representatives, the people who attended, said they were going to go back to their constituencies to get a mandate whether they would want to, you know, sign up to that voluntary code of conduct that we were suggesting. And we're supposed to have a follow-up meeting where they will then come and report back to us on whether they think it's a good idea to have a voluntary code. This will be over and above the regulations by ICASA, by the public broadcaster, because those are regulated, but the print media, there is nothing that regulates. You know, print media is self-regulatory. You have the structures there that look at the coverage and so on. And we thought that maybe we can look at election coverage within their broad framework that they have of the press, ombudsman, the president, and so on. But what then happened is that everybody said that they wanted to go and consult their principals, and they will then come back to us with their position. A single election, Honorable Peter Madonna, that matter I think is off the table. It was never brought to us officially. But there has never been any discussion since the general election in this country. I am just looking at those that I have not answered. Please, colleagues, look at that. Registration weekend for the group gun. Can I leave it to the clothes?
Please do.
Me and my deputy. We're going to have 2 registration weekends. For now, those are the plans. We haven't quite finalized the date, but they are likely to follow the pattern that we've always had. You know, you know how we've done it: one the year before election, and the second one on the year of the election. So more or less, we're planning along those lines, but we have not firmed up the date. Because once we announce the dates, you know, transparently to all the parties at the same time, so that there's no one who has an unfair advantage of having gotten the date before it was officially announced. Can I leave it at that? Online registration, we've had big debates about that. The law still says that people have to register in person. We don't even allow posters. Registration. We have looked at all these issues and issues of credibility, of trust, of where we are, the development, and whether our democracy is matured enough to go there. And we feel that maybe the time has not come yet. We have to give it a few more years and we'll consider going there. But for now, it's still registration in person. Our vote has rolled, therefore that's why it's very difficult for anyone to accuse us of having ghost voted on our voters' roll, because we can account for every person who comes, because that person has to show themselves in person. So that safeguard we still like. Pseudo of Association, Honorable Matebe, those titles, you know, registration requirements are very easy in this country. But I think where the matter becomes difficult is the amount of money that a party has to pay to contest an election. And that is where really you separate the ones that really want to contest from the others who just register for sake of instance. Because the amount in the past, I think for the past elections was 540,000 rand. It's likely to go up actually. We take it up in the election, so we have not discussed it, but it's likely to go up. And you forfeit it if you don't get a seat. So I'm just saying that even if you have 200, there's no way you're going to have 225 parties on your ballot paper. The most that we have had was 19 in 2009. So that's where we are. South Africans, as long as you're South African, whether you got South African citizenship through birth or through naturalization, as long as you're South African, you have an ID that proves that you're a citizen, you're entitled to vote, and that's what the law says, and you have to be 18 and above. So I have tried, and colleagues, please take up the questions that I have in the responded to.
Just before Deputy Chair responds, to clarify Honorable McIntosh's program, he is having another meeting, like I indicated, that the committees are clashing. So he has run to the other committee. Deputy Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I wanted to start really on a lighter note to say the suggestion that was made about limiting the number of political parties. Perhaps we could actually start here so that all the parties that are in the National Assembly, they form one party. In order to allow those who are out. But that was just on a lighter note. I wanted to respond to the issue raised by Honorable Gam in relation to the provincial vote. There are two major considerations. The first one is the credibility of the voters' roll. It is important that we understand that from the beginning we say that people have got to register where they are ordinarily resident. And that process constitutes a voter's roll, a segment of a voter's roll for that specific area where a person is going to register. Now, if we have a situation where we have people voting everywhere, all over the country, and being able to get the provincial as well as the national vote, it is likely to affect eventually that credibility of the voters. So, the second consideration really relates to the logistics thereof. On the day of national and provincial elections, you are essentially having 10 elections taking place at the same time. Now, if we are going to be providing at each and every voting station the ballot papers for 10 elections, the cost and the management thereof is going to be almost impossible. So, and we would not be able to give a specific number of the ballot papers for those elections because we do not know how many people will be moving from KwaZulu-Natal to Cape Town, how many people will move from Cape Town to a particular station in Soweto, how many people will be moving from Soweto to different areas. So it becomes therefore important that we make sure that we are able to come up with the logistics that can be able to manage these elections. But the main and the first consideration is that of actually ensuring that we protect the credibility of the voters' roll. So on that basis, we feel that we are not in a position, therefore, to provide a provincial vote to the people who are outside the borders of a particular province. The other question that was raised, I think, relates to the smart card, whether I think it was raised by Honorable Nasema. We have already done the testing, and in terms of the tests that have been conducted, it is going to be possible for us to use even our scanner for the purpose of registering people who got the smart cards as well as the IDs. Our understanding is that coming into this election, we are going to be using dual system. Other people are going to be using the smart cards, those who got smart cards, and those who do not have smart cards will still continue to use the barcoded ID that we've been using for the purpose of the elections. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also thank you to the Honourable Members for their very insightful questions. I'm mindful also of your ruling that you will still be dealing with the legislative amendments. I think as someone who used to sit on your side of the House nearly a decade back, I'm sure your energies are increasingly already focused on that space. And I have very little doubt that it will be a very robust discussion, mindful of the fact that you've also had a request from the IEC around fast-tracking because there are logistical and other consequences of timelines and other issues. But I do think that that will be quite an interesting conversation in the weeks that still lie ahead. Two issues. I think that as the chairperson and the vice-chairperson have already covered these two issues in principle, I don't want to address them in addition. I just want to reinforce that there are areas that are actually a collective effort. Much as the registration drive is primarily and also constitutionally the obligation of the IEC, I think we also need to start asking deeper questions about why so few of our young people are registered and ask them and try to understand how we actually deal with creating an intergenerational sense of ownership over the institutions of democracy, above and beyond only the right to vote. And that is a collective endeavour that doesn't only involve and impact the IEC, and I think it's important that we reinforce that conversation point in this platform that we have in Parliament. And the other issue that also has come to the attention of the IEC very articulately dealt with by our Chair and our Vice-Chair with respect to electoral fraud, as we have seen in Upper Kolusi on a smaller scale in Jozinia and Komashu, is that even there it is a collective responsibility of all of us to ensure that the electoral code is adhered to and that we don't actually reach the stage where we have to increasingly rely on the courts, on the South African Police Service, or on the prosecution authority. All these areas are areas of collective responsibility where as stakeholders we act together, not only as a commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Now, with regard to the proposed amendment, if it means we work overtime, we will do that, and you know we can do that and work extra hours and robust debate also.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. I just want to deal with three questions. Firstly, is one that is really to accentuate what the CEO indicated earlier, relating to the use of the ZipZip on election day. The use of the ZipZip on election day is not to record a vote in any way. The use of the ZipZip is intended to locate the situation of a person on the voter's roll. In other words, every person on the voter's roll has a sequential number. So when your ID is zipped, it says this person is registered at the station and his or her position on the voter's roll is number so and so. So that's the first element. The second element related to that is that the ZIP itself is not, it does not replace the voter's role. The voter's role at the station remains the authoritative document in helping the presiding officer decide whether to accord a person a vote or not. So the ZIP is only an aid to the process, to ensure that the process works faster and so on. The voter's role remains the only official and legal document that guarantees whether a person gets a vote or not. Secondly, is the issue around the 8 warehouses instead of 9. We have a network of 10 warehouses across the country, one national and 9 provincial. In the instance of Limpopo, the current warehouse is small and there are plans afoot to move to a bigger warehouse. So the formalities of procurement are underway, which is why we made reference to today. So, but that is a process that is in hand. Thirdly, the biannual presentation on the voters' role. I think at the invitation of the committee, we would be in a position to come and present the state of the role.
Chair, I deal with one or two that are left. One is Mayor Peterson Maduna on people with disabilities. Yes, we do have for electoral staff. We have categories of persons that we also set or targets that we set. The 2% has been set for elections. In fact. Where it is possible, or as far as is possible, we allocate training for sectors, for their sector as well. In other words, when we work with persons with visual impairments, we go to the associations, we get them to train their trainers, we have a memorandum of understanding with them, and so on and so forth. So we do that. There was a question on the security of voters outside of the voting stations. That's when we speak to the police. We say, let the presiding officer work and do his work or her work in the vicinity, within the boundaries of the voting station. And often we do have police, members of the police allocated to voting stations, and they try to be available for the outside area, but they are also available for the presiding officer. I think those were the questions that were left.
Chair, I think thank you very much. There's just one I think that we did not answer. And this one maybe that the CEO has just spoken about, we call it table and tent outside the voting station. And we've had approaches that we should regulate this and ban tables and tents altogether. And we think that the regulation that we have now is sufficient because it says that tables and tents must be located in such a way that they do not impede access of the voters into the voting station. So as the CEO has explained, that the presiding officer will then, together with the police officers and the police, you know, look at the boundary of the voting station and ensure that these tables and tents are as far as possible from the boundary of the voting station. And the reason why we can't regulate this, as he has indicated, it's very difficult for us to police what happens outside the boundary of the polling station, and we don't even have the capacity to do that. I think the question that was asked is who is allowed to visit the voting stations, and I don't think we responded to that question. And that question is quite important because on voting day we have requests from ministers, cabinet ministers, and so on, and political party leaders and their bodyguards and to enter the police station. But we normally have, you know, an arrangement where we request that we'll be informed in advance who is going to come. But legally speaking, the people who must be inside, the party agents, they must be inside. So the other thrill is an arrangement that we become a little bit flexible. But, you know, after we've been consulted, we must be told in advance that the leader of this political party wants to visit this voting station. And if that person happens also to be a high-ranking public official who comes with bodyguards, we have to know, because sometimes that becomes an issue. It has become an issue in the past.
Hi, Salo. It's on this area because I know that candidates can visit any station because they are accredited. But you also find that leaders of political parties were not in that. They were not contesting. You know, the leaders of political parties don't stand in elections. And now they will say, I'm a leader of a political party. I think there should be a way to accommodate them as accredited people. Otherwise, we're not going to allow them. They're going to have problems. So if they know you can't come in, show us that you are accredited. Because you don't want to deal with other minute, but which might be very big issues on the day of the election. I know for a fact that we had instances in our constituency where we had ministers now, they say, but you know, and the bodyguards are there to protect him. But if he was alone, I'm sure that he would have been able to assist him to stop that. But the issue is that in an election it becomes so real that it's not a matter of I'm big, it's a matter of are you adhering to the laws on the land. So we don't want that chair on the day. But I think let me ask this question now on the result center. I just want to understand whether will it be, because there are 10 provincial as well as the national one, will you have the centers at municipalities where you're collating the results? Because I'm trying to understand on that day when you leave with the results from a station. Where instances, you know, after the election we had a meeting here, we debated. It's still fresh in our minds and hearts. Where there was a particular polling station, and at that time you were the CEO, Madam Chair, where boxes loaded with votes, which is active ballot papers that had been voted into. And you saw the ballot papers and all of them stored in a classroom in a particular school in Kailita. And when we sat down, we even asked the police, we found the IEC, everybody went to that school in Tawalang and Kailita. And as the person contesting, you know, wanting to become an MP, become so emotional at that time, and they sing in my voice. So we then called police, and I think we debated it here in the committee, some of these anecdotal incidents. Now, I want to understand whether, because when we got the response, they said, no, you know, we felt that we must use it as a warehouse as well. Now, it has not gone somewhere. So we'd like to know the warehouses in each province, where will they be, will it only be one, and how are you taking the ballots to those, you know, so that we cut out on these allegations and, in you know, potential conflicts, which could be unnecessary. So I think that is my question, and I'm not sure whether it was clear to everyone. Thank you.
No, the CEO can respond to this because we do have a system how the ballots move, you know, right, and from the top and down. So he will explain how that works. But maybe what we should be considering as well is the system, how they then move from the polling station up to the warehouses after voting. I don't know what, let us see or speak about that thing.
I thought we have party agents who usually transport these boxes to whatever centers they are being taken. So when we are now, you'll get one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've really had the privilege of getting to know this Khayelitsha situation quite well over the years, and it's been a real problem. But Chairperson and members, you know, on a light note, on election day, we will not be without logistical problems. It's just the extent to which we have those problems and how we manage them. In the Khayelitsha example, and there are a few like that. There's a story that my colleague Sai was telling me in the last elections, where you have party agents and everybody, they come, they do everything properly, and then they seal the ballot. They seal the results slip in there, everything, and they all go home and they switch off their phones and they go and sleep after 48 hours of work. Now, when you sit in a center where you receive the things, you are aware that there is one that is outstanding, and that people have, now they are gone. Now, that those things happen. What we try and do is that every one of those problems, every election we look at and deal with. I cannot say, and I wish I could, cannot say that we will never have a Khayelitsha ever in this country. But we will. We have ways in which we are trying to manage that. In Khayelitsha, the situation was, and I give that because it's a particular example. The situation was that one election result was outstanding. They even approached the commission to say, look, we can't find the results, we now have to break the seal on these ballot boxes, and to break that seal, there must be a commission resolution. You know, otherwise boxes will be open. And they recounted. Once they had finished, they decided that this result was the most important thing that we needed to have out, and send away this, and left the ballot boxes vulnerable. So all of those are inadequacies that we need to find ways to address. But in elections, if you have 3 hours of no logistical problems, you had a great day. Mm. You know, so we try, we will, and we will always do. I will never say to my colleagues, if you've had 3 hours, then we can have the slouches. But we will have to manage these things. And it should never be a widespread problem. And truthfully, if we do have it, we would want to be honest and open about it and say to yourselves, this is where we have had challenges. This is what the challenges imply. And, come in with that situation as opposed to just you finding out that there were things done here, there, and there. I just thought, Chairman, in the normal way, be honest about these things and say it will not be that we will not have this. Perhaps the last thing I need to say, my colleagues in electoral operations are looking at ways of tracking material to the specific voting station, and they're trying to find out how we take that material back to a central point where they're going to be stored. All of these are things that we try and do in the back room and see, you know, if you will see results without knowing what they're doing in the back room. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I would like to thank the Electoral Commission for the good work that you are doing. And let me still the words of the Umfana when Nkosi has just gone out again. But there you are, actually the final flower of civilization. And I hope, we hope that you will continue with your good work, you know, to be the shining star of the continent as well as globally. You know, other countries should come and learn, like you said, from you, from your good work. We hope you will continue with it and be the shining star. Commissioner Salas. Thank you very much. But can we have the AFC conference remain, please?